From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is going to be made at the dinner table on Thanksgiving. Your whole family gathered together for the holiday. What could be better? You know, maybe you have an agreement in advance. Don't talk about politics, or don't talk about, well, certain subjects that might make people upset. And maybe it sounds a little bit like this.
Before we all dig in, I think it might be nice if we could go around the table and talk about what we're thankful for this Thanksgiving. I am so thankful that all of you are here, especially you, Uncle Crotchety.
Yeah. I drove 6 hours to be here, and you're not going to feed me?
We're going to eat in just a moment, but first, why don't you tell us what you're thankful for?
I'm thankful that this conversation's going to end soon.
Uh-huh. What else?
I'm thankful that we can eat with the lights on and you didn't cook the turkey over a fire pit in the forest.
What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, I know how you people feel about climate change. I thought we'd be eating by candlelight and you make us get on an exercise bike to power the heat in your tiny home.
It's a duplex.
I'm just saying. All this climate change stuff is fear for nothing. The planet's fine.
The planet is not fine.
How is it not fine? We're here, right?
But future generations
are... Look, I care about this generation. My generation. The one that has prepared the planet for you. I also prepared some beef. Where's the beef I brought?
Yeah, and animal agriculture releases tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. It's a huge part of greenhouse gas emissions.
And you know what's not huge? My patience right now. I'm not arguing. Let's dig in.
What, dig with your diesel-powered tractor?
Mm.
What are you doing? Did you just break my wine glass?
It said made in China. Isn't your bleeding heart worried about how much fossil fuel you had to burn to get this thing halfway across the world to your dinner table?
Stop it!
Why not drink out of this environmentally friendly paper straw that's disintegrating in my mouth? Yum. Wine. And paper parts.
Ugh. Instead of guzzling my wine, why don't you get in your gas-guzzling SUV and go home?
But I still want to eat. Let's just change the subject.
Good idea. This is way too toxic.
So what does everybody think about the impeachment hearings?
All right. See? I hope your gathering goes a little more smoothly than that one did. Our thanks to Megan Mack, Juan Vazquez behind that one. And according to a new poll from Morning Consult, about 1 in 5 adults expect to have a discussion about climate change this Thanksgiving. 42% of the people surveyed said they are more likely to start those conversations than they would have been a year ago. So what's a good way to initiate those conversations, which can be uncomfortable or even rancorous? Our guests this hour will share their ideas for having productive discussions about climate change and climate actions that do not lead to breaking glass. And in some ways, this is an extension of the conversation started by this man, Kevin Schulte, the CEO of GreenSpark Solar. He wrote a piece, an op-ed recently, talking about his views on the effective ways to engage people about climate change. And I thought, well, great. You know, it's early November. We'll talk about how to do this on Thanksgiving. We got so sidetracked with a million different things, we never got there. So we're back. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Also with us is Rob Levine, who's a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby. To my knowledge, hasn't broken any glasses at Thanksgiving.
Not yet, and plan not to. Thanks, Kevin.
Well, it's nice to have you back here.
Thank you, Evan.
And Fred Dewey is on the line with us, the facilitator for Life Results. Fred, welcome. How are you?
Hi. Great. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, we're going to talk about emotional intelligence and the way we engage with one another. Why don't you tell us, Fred, what Life Results is?
Life Results is a weekend workshop that people can take, and the goal of the workshop is for you to learn tools that you can use in order to come from love and respect toward other people as well as yourself a lot more of the time. And so we, over the course of the weekend, we learned 15 different tools or different ways we can catch ourselves in those negative moments where we're saying bad things to ourselves, or, you know, or treating the people around us not the way we want to treat them, and catch ourselves in the moment and shift into a more positive and respectful and loving space.
Hmm. Is one of the tools you teach just to avoid Thanksgiving entirely?
No, that's not one of the tools. In fact, we help you to avoid avoidance.
Well, so we're going to get back to that emotional intelligence and the way we engage in just a moment here. Kevin Schulte, the CEO of GreenSpark Solar, you were here a few weeks ago making the kind of argument that I think was timely. And it really sparked, a lot of feedback from people who, generally speaking, agreed with the notion of what works, and then maybe others who still feel that they've got this moral component deep down. I'm not saying you're an amoral or immoral person, but why don't you re-engage with us on what that argument was, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I wrote a piece, and it has had a lot of responses driven a lot of conversation. And the piece's, I think, primary thesis is that in 2019, our opportunity to impact climate change is largely driven in the volume of solutions that can help us in combating climate change are now economically practical. Therefore, I think the best way to broadly engage all members of society, all of whom need to be engaged in order to combat and win climate change, is to search for the solutions and the economics of those solutions with all of those individual people. And so I think that it is a consistently challenged argument, if you bring in politics, which are obviously very rancorous at the moment, and if you bring in morality or ethics, those things tend to drive people away from the climate conversation, whereas the economics should draw everyone in. So that was sort of the thesis of the piece I wrote, and I don't think I've changed my opinion in the 2 weeks since I was here.
but let's talk about how you actually do engage people. So we had a bit of a cartoonish opening there, and yet at the same time, I can imagine similar conversations happening in countless locations. So if someone says to you, "Oh, I can't believe we're not eaten by candlelight here," or "Where's your solar now, Mr. Solar Man?" in late November. They start sort of mocking the idea. How do you engage with them? What's your first step?
My solar was here all weekend, just for the record, here in Rochester. It was a lovely, sunny weekend.
But it doesn't have to be sunny to be here, by the way. I mean, like, right? I mean,
correct.
You always remind us of that. I've correct. Always remembered that. But anyway, go ahead.
But it is a sunnier place than we all want to give ourselves credit for.
That's good.
So I think the question of whether or not we lit with candlelight, I mean, I do look at people's light bulbs when I'm in their living room. Now, I will be at my parents. I've been at my mother's house for Thanksgiving every year of my existence, and I have gradually helped my parents to understand the right choices in picking how you light your home, and that they buy community solar, and they're looking into EVs. So I no longer have to have that debate with the host. I also have a massive family, which is fairly well versed at knowing the concept of avoiding hot button issues. I will tell you, probably my most famous time that this happened was about 2005. A cousin of mine came home and told me he got accepted to West Virginia and that he was going to West Virginia to study oil and gas engineering. I may or may not have imbibed in a cocktail or two, and I responded to him by saying, "Well, why don't you just go to school to study Sanskrit, a 10,000-year-old dead language?" And that started a rather raucous debate. I have practiced avoidance more strongly since that time. So my general response to people is we do not have to fight climate change by going back to being cavemen. We can fight climate change by accepting the practical and economic solutions like, I don't know, LED light bulbs, which are a cheaper and better alternative than CFLs, which were a cheaper and better alternative to incandescent bulbs, et cetera. And so I would probably take the conversation down the path of understanding someone else's different option.
Okay. Rob, what is your approach if and when it comes up, especially when someone is, and I guess I want to frame it this way this hour. I am trying mostly to move past the notion of whether it exists or not, whether it's happening or not, because for the most part, we have done that. Now what you often hear is this idea of mocking the proposed solutions, mocking what it would cost or not cost, which is such a big part of what Kevin's talking about, educating people on the actual economic benefits.
Right.
But what's your approach when people are aggressive about it?
Well, I think I've learned probably the hard way that going into that moral and ethical argument doesn't work. And so you really have to try to first find some common ground with who you're talking to. And if you do that, and if you ask questions of people, they'll help you with the conversation on which way you need to go. Because I do agree with Kevin that at this point in time, the economics are favorable. A lot of people don't get to that point, though, because they're stuck on politics. They're stuck on the moral ethical argument or the religious argument. And so I don't know about you, but I don't win very many arguments that I have with people. And so it's finding that common ground and be authentic. Talk about reasons that it's important to you to look for solutions to climate change, and why it's important to you to broaden the scope of what we're doing. I think, you know, a couple of weeks ago when Kevin was on, my difference with Kevin at that point in time was he was downplaying political solutions and that economics solely are the way to go. And I agree to a certain extent, but climate change is so big and it's hard for people to wrap around what's so big. I believe politics has to come into play because the solutions have to be that big.
But does politics poison everything these days?
Often it does. So you have to be careful. And that's why I go back to what's the common ground? What do you care about? You know, if you know someone has a cottage up in the Adirondacks, then focus on that. And then, so how has climate change affected what's going on in the Adirondacks? Oh, black fly season is 2 weeks longer or 2 weeks shorter, whatever it is. And work on those
ticks
issues.
Ticks everywhere.
You know, I actually have a couple of dogs that have had tick problems over the last few years, and sometimes that's the best way to go. Have you found that, you know, you're walking the dog with somebody on Thanksgiving, which we all try to do after Thanksgiving, is try to walk it off before the next game. And so that's what you got to do. You got to connect with the person you're talking to. And it's not often the moral or political argument. And then if you can get some agreement on that climate change is real, it's happening, and it's bad, then you talk about the solutions, economics will play a big part of it. That, so, I don't disagree with Kevin at all.
Do you think maybe, you know, like someone like me, I pulled a tick off my son's head in April before there were any buds on the trees. We were out geocaching and had a great day, and then he's going to bed, and yep, that is a tick and a scalp.
Uh-huh.
And good times for me. We did it. And, you know, so, but the interesting thing is a lot of people you talk to have similar experiences, whether it's their kids, their dogs, themselves. Yeah. That common ground, do you think it's then, if someone were to say, and you know what? Everything I read tells me that that's only going to get worse and that we're seeing a spread of that kind of thing because of climate. If they go, if someone says to you, oh, Rob, are you going to do that whole climate change thing again? Mm-hmm. Is that what this is about? Is mm-hmm. What do you say to that?
Yes. I think the biggest problem we have is we're not talking about climate change enough.
You don't like when people shy away from it?
No, I don't. It's a big problem, and there's a clock ticking. Some problems we have, there's not a window of opportunity to make effective change in terms of solutions.
Or wait till everyone's comfortable with it?
Yeah. I mean, if we wait till everyone's comfortable with it, it's way too late, in my opinion, because I believe the science. And I believe what the scientists and the economists say is we have a 10 or 11-year window now. I mean, it was 12 years a year ago when the IPCC report came out. That was last November. It's now November, a year later, and nothing has changed.
So
we need to talk about this, and that's where the Greta Thunberg effect has been helpful, is more people are talking about it.
Before I ask for Fred on his take on the way we engage, regarding Greta, someone like Greta Thunberg, 16 years old, becoming an international figure on this, you know, Kevin's point about Greta Thunberg is not that she's wrong or that I think his point is that she's entirely admirable. And she may be galvanizing people who are already on the side, but we may be at the time where we're not really encouraging or even convincing people who don't agree. Did you disagree with that portion of that?
No, I don't disagree with
Interesting.
That.
Interesting.
I don't think that's – I think the people that really disagree is a small number of people. They're vocal. The spread due to the misinformation campaign by the fossil fuel industry has been extremely effective. It's the same company. It's the same firm that worked with the tobacco industry. They both started this disinformation back in the late 50s, to be honest with you, and they're good at it. So what I like about Greta is that all of a sudden there's an explosion of people talking about it, and the more youth that get involved, the more people will look to see that this is an issue that has longevity to it. You know, we have to start thinking about future generations, and that's where that clock really is important to me.
Fred Dewey, as someone who works regarding emotional intelligence and the way we engage one another. So if we're not telling people to avoid these conversations or if they come up, what do you find to be the most effective and what do you find to be the most common pitfalls people have when they engage one another?
A couple different
angles that are available. One of them is to listen first and talk second. I think that's really, really important. You know, gaining, and it was mentioned a few minutes ago, gaining understanding, making sure the other person feels and is heard. We regularly are so busy focusing on what we're going to say next or what big convincing argument we're going to lay out next that we actually fail to listen to what the other person is saying. And if we listen, not only will they feel heard, but we'll be better informed about where they're coming from. So I think that's first and foremost. In terms of pitfalls, the biggest issue that I see is people turn it personal. And, you know, while Megan's skit at the beginning of this hour was, you know, was humorous and a little bit exaggerated, it wasn't very much exaggerated. And you can see how the dynamics shift into the personal so quickly. You know, and it doesn't even have to be an attack with words. It can be just an attack with tone of voice. You know, oh, here comes Mr. Solar. Hey, what do you have to say about it, Mr. Solar? You know, I haven't said anything wrong, but the other person is clearly attacked, right? So what I think is really, really important is when it turns personal, and it will turn personal in many cases, is for at least one of the two people to keep their cool. And, you know, so I'm only talking to the people that are listening right now. So for those of you who are listening, it's critical that you keep your cool. Take a few deep breaths. Remember, this is your dad you're talking to, or your mom, or one of your kids, or a sibling, or your uncle. And even if they're not being civil, we can stay civil. You can stay civil. But to me, that's the most important thing, is when they go low, don't go low with them. Bring it back around to, hey, I'm trying to, you know, okay, so it seems like you've got a lot of negative energy, you know, uncle stuck in the mud about, you know, about solar energy. Tell me more about that. Like, what are you thinking about? What are you worried about? What's kind of behind your concern? And so that's the example where he's gone low, and I just took it back to high.
Let's pivot over on that point to Kevin Schulte, because when people do that, if people are mocking or defensive or dismissive, and they don't know much about something like solar, which is your life's work, but they think they do, or they've read something or they've heard something, what's your most, like, if I were, you know, Uncle So-and-so, and I said, oh, Kevin, you're going to do that thing where you destroy my roof with, you know, a bunch of solar panels that, you know, don't actually do anything but lead to socialism, what do you say?
Well, typically when, at this day and age, when people argue that it doesn't work or something like that, I will take out my phone and show them the app that shows how much power and how little my electric bill is. That's sort of the easiest way these days. Like, really? I live in Rochester. I live, my family's from outside Philadelphia, so I drive 5 hours south of here. And I say, look, I live 6 hours north of here. It's really simple. Here's my electric bill. Here's my solar production. Like,
is that pretty effective?
It is pretty effective.
Because that is direct dollars and cents.
It is direct dollars and cents.
Mock it all you want. Here's my bill.
But I got to go back to Rob, and I guess stop arguing. The point is to stop arguing.
Right.
You are not going to change. When you're at the Thanksgiving room table, you are not going to have, you know, all of the documents and evidence and economics and everything to make this argument. So stop arguing. Remove the argument from that part of the dialogue. A, because it'll help you get through dinner. You know, B, because the reality is, just suggest practical things to them that they can do. And it doesn't have to do with climate, because you're not, that argument is, in some senses, it's unwinnable. And my the point of my paper is it's unwinnable because of the moral and political rancor that has drawn the climate discussion in. It's challenged for you to win. Now, listen, the particular vice of being a Schulte, we don't lose arguments. We don't. I was born this way. I'm stuck this way. I can't fix it.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's my reality. Like, everyone that works for me, everyone that meets, you'll understand that in time. It's just part of my DNA that is a challenging thing. Right. So in order for me to not lose an argument, because I know I can't convince Uncle Jimmy to switch to my side of the conversation, like, I'm going to take him and say, look, dude, just buy this light bulb. You know, go buy this bag of celery instead of that bag of celery. You got to take it away from the things that are there to argue about and take it to things that are inarguable.
Let me ask Rob to respond to that, and then I want to follow up. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I agree. I mean, like I said earlier, you can't win an argument, especially if there are political, social, religious, you know, connotations involved in any shape, way, or form. So you do need to back away. And again, I say look for common ground, you know, and if it's saving money on light bulbs, that's a great place to go. If it's about a place, you know, if you have a place near the shore, talk about the shore and just say, so, you know, how's it been for you down there? Ask them questions about, you know, have you noticed a change in tide patterns or anything? Does that affect you? And if it affects you, they're mostly going to come up with economic reasons. Yeah, I had to pay to get my, you know, basement pumped out, and then I had to get it all waterproofed again. That's an economic issue. Say, okay, well, what if we, you know, could get around that? How do we together solve that problem? Then you can get into a conversation, and it's not an argument.
Well, but to Kevin's point about the fact that that a lot of this is now an unwinnable argument, given the political nature and given just how charged that can become,
yeah.
I want to play a little devil's advocate here. It's not that I disagree with that, because largely I do think that there's almost nothing that you cannot actually change someone's mind on with time and effective presentation. But having said that, it can be extremely, extremely difficult. Why do you think the public opinion on this issue has changed so much in years? If it is now largely an unwinnable argument, we have seen the public opinion shift in the same way that, for example, same-sex marriage saw a massive change in public opinion. And at some point a generation ago, someone would have said, well, don't talk about that. That's an unwinnable argument. What is it that changed the public opinion on issues like that that seem intractable?
I think that the very obvious publicized news around extreme weather events, around our own windstorm from a couple of years ago. You talk about place. My family vacations at Long Beach Island in New Jersey. Our beach is 50 feet shorter than it was 10 years ago. You know, those things have changed your very real perception mm-hmm. for people. And that's an evolutionary part of the dialogue. People are actually seeing it with their own two eyes. We have obviously more extreme weather events. We have, you know, the wildfires that are just all over the news. These things, like, I think over time people have, you know, to the parlance of our time, 2 + 2 = 4
right.
when it gets spoken about that frequently. And I think that's a big part of what I'm trying to say is that evidentiary evolution will come with time. And in the interim, our challenge is to get people to solve on their own by teaching them ways to do it that are non-controversial and non-argumentative.
Okay. Rob? I'll agree to that. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, Fred, why don't you jump in? We'll come back to Rob in a sec. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, I wanted to build on that. It's important to remember, and this is especially true at the holiday dinner table, you might be debating with Uncle Stuck in the Mud. It's not a private conversation. You know,
right.
There's 2 or 4 or 20 other people listening. And so when you're arguing with someone, you might actually be talking and reaching the other people that you're not even directly talking and arguing with. So I think it's really important to keep in mind that we can change hearts and minds at the Thanksgiving table while arguing with Uncle Stuck in the Mud and not realize it. And if you think about it from that perspective, then that's all the more reason we need to conduct ourselves with honor and respect and calmness and, you know, and rationality. When the other person's going low, we stay high and just keep presenting interesting things. We may never convince the uncle to change his mind, but we might win over 7 other cousins.
So, Fred, on that point, if someone, generally speaking, take climate out and any subject, if there is an observer of an argument and the observer doesn't really have a strong opinion, but their observation is one side of the argument is this person's just a jerk and the other person is being reasonable, are they more likely to gravitate to the reasonable person's side even if they didn't come in with much of a view or a previous idea about it?
Absolutely.
I hope so.
And if you think about your own experience, you know, how often have you been that observer? and you've come away with a really negative feeling about the one person and the case they were making, and a very positive feeling about the other person and the case they were making. Maybe not even because of the data or facts that were being presented, but just because of the way the person was conducting themselves.
Hmm. Rob, you want to add to it? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you started with a premise that there's such a split now about people who are, you know, that's such a hard thing to talk about. And you know,
I think the split is on the politics of policy prescription
right.
for what to do.
Right. And I was going to refer you all to the Yale Climate Communications Program. And they have data here that's incredible. They do a lot of polling nationwide. And you'd be surprised at how many people do understand that climate change is real, that it's a problem, that it's bad, that it's human-caused, and that will say government needs to take action and businesses need to take action. There's a lot more support for this than I think people realize. In Monroe County, over 72% of people, according to the Yale group, mm-hmm. you know, are behind anything we can do about climate to make things better. So you're not going to really find as many people as you think who are going to be against all of these things. One of the problems I have to make this thing work today with Kevin's you know, stance that get Uncle Jimmy to change a couple of light bulbs this year, that's not going to do it for us. Getting everybody to change their light bulbs is great. That's not going to solve climate change in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but Uncle Jimmy also doesn't direct federal policy.
No, I understand that. And yes, we want people to understand that there are things that they can do. Again, we disagree in this, but the solutions to climate change that we have to take over the next 10 years or less are much bigger than light bulb changing. They're systemic changes okay. that need to be made.
Kevin.
No way. That is nonsensical. Small decisions in anyone's lives lead to bigger decisions. That is human nature. You start down this path. You say, okay, I'm going to change these 10 light bulbs and I'm going to save $20 on my electric bill. Those things work.
We've been changing light bulbs for how long now, Kevin?
Uncle Jimmy hasn't.
Right.
Uncle Jimmy hasn't, but Greta and all of Greta's followers have been.
Right.
And the problem isn't with that segment of the population. The problem is with the segment of the population that doesn't buy the climate argument. So, listen, you're talking to someone that spends a significant portion of his time lobbying in Albany and lobbying in Washington. So, in none of what I'm speaking of, does there not need to be real policy change right now that has to happen in order to continue the progress that we're making on climate? And we're making progress.
Okay. I kind of disagree there. You know, and I guess, you know, again, I don't want to argue with it because it's Thanksgiving for one. So
well,
we could save it till after dinner.
It's like putting a knife in my heart. When I started into this in 1996, when I learned that climate change was a problem, we had less than 0.01% wind in this country. We had less than that of solar in this country. Mm-hmm. We now have exponentially increased the adoption of wind and solar. Globally, it's even faster than it is here in the United States. Like, it's just wrong. We are doing things.
Then
we are
why,
making progress. Should it go faster? Well, certainly I want it to go faster, and certainly I believe deployment is the key to that, and new technology is the key to that, and policy will drive all of that, and that's all part of it. And I don't question that for a second, and I don't question that we need to pick up the pace. I work every day to pick up the pace. But to suggest that we're not making progress,
I don't think we're making enough progress at all, not even close.
Well, no, there's a difference because you said we're not making progress. Not making enough progress. We can all agree on.
I'll modify that. We're not making enough progress. And the IPCC report says we need to do much bigger things than just changing light bulbs. I'm not saying changing light bulbs is a bad thing.
But we
cleaning
as
your refrigerator is a better idea, right? Doesn't that save more energy?
We as a society, right, need to shape big change. Each individual needs to make small decisions to incrementally improve each individual's disposition.
I'm not arguing that.
The combination of those things meets in the middle for a real climate solution. You cannot have one without the other. You can't. It will not work that way. I'm not arguing that. Because if you create opportunities with policy and other things to deploy solar, carbon sequestration, whatever it is, it doesn't matter if Jimmy's still down there burning his gas generator to power his home. You got to change all of those things. It's society. It's across all of society. So for you to ignore the people in the conversation that are not going to come to your side in the climate argument, if you ignore them by not creating opportunities for them to change their mind and take up changing light bulbs or whatever have you, making better food choices, cleaning out the refrigerator, making sure the dishwasher's full. If you're not doing both, neither works.
Go ahead, Rob.
I'm not sure. I can't argue with that. I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be doing individual things. What I'm saying is that we have a limit on the time that we have to make the systemic change. And by talking about all the little things, sometimes we're not focusing on the bigger issue.
So to cut through this, because then I want to, we got to get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back. We're going to get some listener feedback. We've got some really good questions, and I think Fred Dewey is going to be able to help listeners really think about these, especially the way they talk to people. Sometimes it's neighbors, and we'll get Rachel's email from Canandaigua coming up here. We'll get a phone call. But it sounds to me like what you and Kevin are, you may be talking past each other a little bit, because you agree that you need the large-scale societal solutions. Kevin is saying, in that moment at Thanksgiving, you're not going to fix federal policy. You're not doing international policy. All you got's your uncle who doesn't buy it. And the question is, what works? And when he says, let's compare electric bills, or let's talk about the light bulbs you buy, and your response is, that's not enough. The question is, why is that not enough with just your uncle? He's not saying do that and do only that. But he's saying, in that moment at Thanksgiving, is that enough for you?
Let me answer that after the break.
You want to think about it?
I do.
No. We must always have opinions that are fixed. Our opinions are fixed. Our minds do not move. Hey, that's totally fair.
Let me think about it.
Rob Levine's a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby. Kevin Schulte is the CEO of GreenSpark Solar. Fred Dewey's on the line with us, facilitator for Life Results, and your feedback as we talk about how to talk about climate at Thanksgiving after the break. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, it's report card time. Rock the Future's annual report card on the state of our children in schools in our community. We'll find out how we're doing. In our second hour, group community members from different faith-based groups are teaming up for an interfaith Thanksgiving service. The goal is to create partnerships going forward with the theme, Planting Seeds for a Peaceful Election Year. We'll talk about how to do it Tuesday. This is Connections. Our apology to anyone who is an actual Uncle Jimmy. I mean, like, because that's sort of become sort of the phrase. And we can go with aunt for the rest of the hour if you want. There's aunts and uncles and all kinds of people you will disagree with. To be clear,
that's why I was going with Uncle Stuck in the Mud.
There you go. Uncle Stuck in the Mud's fine. To be clear, if anybody has wondered about, you know, sort of, well, Evan, you're betraying your bias as a host. The only bias I have is climate change is a global emergency. It is a crisis. It is real. On the policy side, I don't know. I'm certainly, what I want are the right kind of policies that galvanize people to do the right things for future generations. That is nebulous. It is not picking sort of any particular side. It's not meant to be squishy. I'm listening as we talk about what is effective as we try. So I'm not sitting here going, well, how do you get your uncle or your aunt to believe exactly what I believe or what you believe? It's more about what's effective in how we communicate. And a different Fred on the line with us in Rochester is first on the phones. Go ahead, Fred in Rochester. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. This has been an incredible discussion because it has been so spot on. I started my own professional career with climate change in 1987 in Rochester at the Center for Environmental Information, when we had been working for the previous 5 years on acid rain-related issues with some of the very same rhetoric of the deniers that acid rain was causing anything. I really think I've been involved. I worked at CEI. I've worked at Oak Ridge National Laboratory in the Carbon Dioxide Information Analysis Center and presently at the University of Buffalo. And I don't think that very many people have an idea of how heavy a lift it is to get ourselves out of the climate problem that we have created. And in terms of looking at things and saying it's a generational thing, if about 250 years ago, a bunch of men didn't start thinking about getting out of the colonial realm of England, we wouldn't be sitting here today. And it was 250 years ago where people had an idea that we've got to do something. And 243 years ago, they did something. We've got to start doing some things, because in about 243 years from now, there's not going to be very much fossil fuel left. And we have to replace all of that energy with something else. People call it green energy, which I don't like. I like smart energy, because I think that what we're looking at is a situation, a scenario. If you just look around you where you're sitting right now or standing, everything that you see in the future is going to have to be made with no fossil fuels. And how are you going to get that? And you're not going to get that unless you start trying. And if you start trying by putting LED light bulbs in your home, that's the first small step that you take. I was trained by Al Gore 13 years ago to give his slideshow, and I've been a mentor for the Climate Reality Project since then. And I go to give these presentations, and I look at a parking lot that's got more vans and SUVs and 4x4 trucks in it by people who want to listen. They want to listen to the message, oh, we got to do something about climate change. And then one or two people jump into their vehicle and drive off. Not very many people walk. Very few people ride a bike. Nobody wants to carpool. There's no public transportation. And yet everybody is sort of like thirsty for knowledge. I work in my profession. I'm a science librarian with degrees in biology, zoology, and library science. And I've been down this road for too long to think about, we got to just sort of like think about this some more. No, we got to start going from an era of environmental activism to environmental action.
All right, Fred, thank you for that. I appreciate the phone call. Kevin Schulte, you started this mess, this whole conversation a month ago. So, but what do you make of Fred's point?
I agree totally. I mean, I don't think that anything Fred is saying is indifference to what I'm saying. And I think, right, you've sort of brought this up through the course of these two dialogues. There are different conversations that have to be had, right? There's Uncle Jimmy at the Thanksgiving table. There is conversations in Albany. There are conversations in Washington. There are conversations with potential consumers that are going to make significant decisions for solar or LED lighting or any of those things. And all of those conversations carry with them different contexts to, if you want to call it an argument, to win the argument, right? And to get to the other side. And so, you know, from a federal and international policy perspective, I have a lot of opinions on whether or not we should be doing, you know, carbon tax and all of those things, you know, down to whether or not Uncle Jimmy should put the LED bulb in instead of buying an incandescent. I have context for each of those conversations. And the piece, right, that I wrote started with my daily disposition, which is trying to convince consumers to make a consumer choice to go green, to use solar, et cetera. So I think all of those things, and I go back to the point we made the last time I was here, all of these things have to work in concert with each other, because no one of them gets the job done.
Now, I've got a specific comment I want to kick to Rob Levine in just a moment, but let me bring Fred Dewey back in, from facilitator from Life Results. Robert writes to say, many listen with the intent to reply, not to understand, so I'll just be yelling at the Bills game. That's what Robert says about Thursday. Fred, we can talk about the importance of talk less, listen more, try to understand. But beyond that sort of generality, is it the kind of thing where you have to literally be intentional every conversation? Otherwise, you will find yourself drifting back into argumentative mode. I mean, how do you actually pick up the tools to do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that is the challenge in front of us. Yeah, it takes a very high level of intentionality to stay listening and stay respectful when the momentum of the conversation is shifting into either argumentativeness or personal attacks. And so it's a choice that we can make moment by moment to make the decision to listen to the person and really seek to understand where they're coming from. And in a lot of cases, if you do that, what you'll find is that people are a product of whatever media channels they tune into. One of the challenges we have right now, and one of the things driving our incredible divisiveness is, you know, we've all picked an echo chamber and parked ourselves in it. And, you know, so the person you're talking to, they literally have different facts and different information and different belief systems than you do because of the media channels that they're choosing to tune into. So the opportunity for us, and I think the key to this, is for us to first understand, hey, what data are you operating off of? What have you heard about this? What do you think you know, or what do you know you know? And then I can calmly share with you what I know, or I think I know. And then that's where there's an opportunity for some common ground, or, you know, or some understanding flowing back and forth. So you're absolutely right. It's intentional. And one person in the conversation, at least, has to maintain that intentionality, or it's going to go down the drain like it did in that skit at the start of this hour.
I want to read a comment from Joseph on Twitter who says, my question is always about theory of change. Maybe stop arguing with ungettable family members at the dining table and instead try to motivate those who aren't currently engaged. Then gain power together via solidarity and make deniers' views irrelevant to policy. Rob, did you write that comment, or is that just something that you
just
would agree
what I was thinking, though.
That sounds kind of like the point you're making. Are you gravitating away from actually trying to convince the ungettable?
I think in this case, yes. I think to answer your question before is I'm not going to really try to convince Uncle Jimmy at the Thanksgiving table because it's too much work. And I think, as Kevin would agree, I'm not going to win an argument with him. And I don't think I need to. Maybe that's where we have some
kind
of disagreement.
I think that's what Joseph is saying. Joseph is saying one of the strategies is not to fret about that.
Right. Right.
And to say, okay, who's galvanizable? Who can be motivated?
Right.
To do more?
I mean, think if you're at the table, you might want to include other members at the table and say,
yeah.
I mean, if you really want to keep it going,
yeah.
Say so.
Because you're going to talk about it at the table anyway.
Right. So I might ask Aunt Rose, you know, what do you think, Aunt Rose? And let them get into the conversation. You might let four or five other family members work on Uncle Jimmy. And then you can augment them if you feel you have some knowledge base, like I feel I have enough to support them.
Yeah,
that might work. But I think, you know, I said I wanted to think about it at the break. I think I would not even bother with Uncle Jimmy because there are plenty of other people who I can work on who are going to be much more effective in looking at the big picture. I'm really a bigger picture person. I've never been minute details. And light bulbs are great, but I want bigger, broader policy change.
Mm.
And so that's where I'm going to go. And my wife will tell you it would be a good idea for me not to argue with Uncle Jimmy.
Well, before I get Fred Dewey's take on that, Kevin, how do you feel about that idea of trying not to get the ungettable and galvanize those who might be motivated to do more?
I think there's some pragmatism to it, but I also think that the reality of, and this is your own point, the bigness of the climate problem requires every man, woman, and child in this society to engage in this problem. And whether we engage them consciously or unconsciously, it is the job of those that understand it to engage them.
Is that possible to get everybody involved? Or so, do you need so a certain amount of people?
So it was one of the points. It was one of the points I made in the article is the last great galvanizing moment in this country was World War II. And it took the Japanese bombing of Pearl Harbor, as tracked by the U.S. Holocaust Museum, mm-hmm. to get 91% of the population engaged and behind the effort of World War II. Right. So we talk about climate as if it's that big of a problem.
Yes.
Yet we're not willing to say that we need that level of support because you're going to give up on Uncle Jimmy. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's possible. So I think you have to find ways, again, consciously or subconsciously, right, to get everyone engaged.
I'm curious, did the colonists have 90% of the people behind them to
revolt
against?
So.
Exactly. I mean, that's my point. I don't think you need 90%. I'd love to have 90%. Go back to the moral and ethical argument. I can't believe there's humans who don't think it's an important issue.
So
personal thought there, right? So
if the 50 or 60% that are actually doing something about it are completely undercut by the other 45% that are doing the exact opposite and still burning coal plants and doing all this stuff, like, how does that – it doesn't work.
I'm not sure about that. See, I don't agree that we need – I don't agree that we need 90% of the people to make systemic change that can help on a broader scale.
Now, let's get back to that table question. And Fred Dewey, you know, Rob is making the point that maybe he's going to engage at the table on Thanksgiving with a different family member and just sort of proceed to kind of have a dialogue, ask about their thoughts, while sort of ignoring the most aggressive person. But that aggressive person, whether it's climate, whether it's politics, whether it's anything else, could have a tendency to jump in and try to dominate a conversation, and you get half the people at your table going, oh, God, are we going to do this again? Like, can we talk about anything else? What is Is there a strategy to diffuse that?
I mean, I think so. You just say, well, you know, Uncle stuck in the mud. Okay, we've heard from you, and I'd like to hear from other people about this topic, for a few minutes, just to kind of see what other people are thinking. So that's to me the most direct strategy. And I wanted to say one thing, you know, related to this whole conversation we're having. Most people listening to this conversation right now are very passionate about the topic of climate change and think it's a national emergency at the level that, you know, that the bombing of Pearl Harbor was. And so we have to be talking about it. It's really important. You know, yeah, it might make Thanksgiving less fun. You know, we could all have a better time on Thursday, you know, if we're debating, you know, whether the Cowboys are going to make the playoffs or, you know, will the Bills ever beat the Patriots ever again? That's a safe conversation, but it's not the difference-making one.
Right.
So for the people on listening to this program, we need to be speaking our truth, talking about what matters to us. For most of us, football doesn't matter as much as the climate emergency. So we've got to rise to the occasion. And it's a grassroots, house-to-house thing. You know, if this conversation's occurring at most Thanksgiving dinner tables, great. It might not be a fun conversation, and there might be rancor, and people might get mad, but at least we're having the conversation. And I think that's really important.
I agree. Well, the amazing thing is, when it comes to what might bring you to blows, I mean, I take Fred's larger point that it's more, it might be more enjoyable in life to like think about things that aren't so pressing or potentially not all that pleasant. And yet, what is more likely to bring people to blows at Thanksgiving? Talking about climate change, or if I were to say at a family gathering, Josh Allen couldn't hit the ocean if he threw a football from an aircraft carrier? I might actually get attacked more for that because people are more passionate about the Bills. I think that's mostly untrue about Josh. He's getting better.
Right.
But to Kevin Schulte, you know, to your general point that you raised in the op-ed, which brought us here earlier this month, which is this idea that what is effective now for you to reach across to people who aren't really engaged is the economic argument, less so than the moral. If you are at a table with 10 people and you've got a person or two there who is laughing at you and thinks that what you do is silly and isn't worried about this, you could choose to engage the other people. And then if the other stuff comes up, which are the moral arguments, you may be poisoning your efforts to get to that one or two other people. Do you avoid the moral even when you're in a group setting and stick to the economic now?
Depends on the crowd.
Okay.
I mean, if I'm at Thanksgiving where I will be in, 3 days, and I have, you know, 20 or 25 cousins, nieces, nephews, et cetera, that are under the age of 30.
Right.
Like, I can bring every one of them across. I'm very confident in that. I've been doing that. I know that's a demographic I can be successful with, and I'd be happy to have that conversation. To be honest with you, if Uncle Jimmy's downstairs, I'm upstairs, right? Like, that's just what's happening at
right.
Thanksgiving. And that's not for anyone's sake about the seriousness of the argument or anything else. That's to make sure I'm in the good graces of my mother for not causing, you know, the shakeup of that Thanksgiving meal. So, but, you know, I think, and I go back to a point Fred made a couple minutes ago, that this is challenging because the three people here, everyone on this conversation so far, we're all on the same side of this. And I would venture to guess that not one of us carries the same opinion as the best path forward, whether it's at a right. policy level, whether it's at a moral versus political versus economic argument level, whether it's at a consumer level, or whether it's at a Thanksgiving table level. And to me, that's actually a bigger problem than anything else that's going on, is that we're not even galvanized on one side of our reality that climate's a problem. And I think we could get there, but that's actually a big part of the challenge.
I got an email from Andrew who says, He considers himself technically an Uncle Jimmy because he doesn't really buy into the climate change thing, but he says we might like having resources last longer for future generations. We want resources to last longer so the cost of using the resources will not escalate faster than they need to. We Uncle Jimmys might also enjoy clean air and water. We might employ practices to keep these available to us. We might like trees and forests for the relaxing getaways they provide. Just because we Uncle Jimmys don't buy into the climate change thing does not mean we do not care for what is available. And he resents the stereotype assigned. I don't mean to create a stereotype, right, Andrew. So I'd like to just say to people like Andrew who are listening, if you felt like we were targeting you, we're not. I mean, in many ways, this is about offering you tools to have a conversation with family who you might feel are casting you out. It's not just about... I hope we all listened to Fred earlier this hour. This is not just about how to convince people that you are right. It's about how to effectively have a dialogue with people. And sometimes that means listening to them and understanding them. So, so 20 seconds, Robert.
He just spoke that common ground that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where I was going to say, one of the things I've learned in the last few years is that if we paint a picture of what a carbon-free life is like, everybody goes, wow, that would be great. If there was no smog in the city and cars were silent and you paint that picture of what life would be like, everybody agrees it'd be great to get
there. It's actually a good life.
Yeah, and it lasts.
It is a good life. Hey, Fred Dewey from Life Results, when can people take a weekend workshop with you?
February 28th is our next workshop, liferesults.org.
And where are you?
Rochester, New York. We do our classes at St. John Fisher.
LifeResults.org. Fred, enjoyed it greatly. LifeResults.org for listeners. Thanks for the tools and happy Thanksgiving to you, sir.
Thank you.
Kevin Schulte is CEO of GreenSpark Solar. Learn more about GreenSpark where, Kevin Schulte?
GreenSparkSolar.com, and I hope Andrew will give us a call because he is the demographic of most of our customers.
Okay, and Andrew, I'm going to say it again, man. I'm glad you emailed, and I certainly don't want anyone to feel that way. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Thank you, Kevin Schulte and Rob Levine, Citizens Climate Lobby, online where?
www.citizensclimatelobby.org.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to everyone here. Emma Ray, interning, Bob the volunteer, Rob and Juan for their help. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.